The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Hey, good to practice with you. If this isn't apparent, I just presume that everyone here knows how to meditate, kind of. And then I'm just, I don't know, doing something. But I hope it's okay. So a few weeks ago, I think I spoke about protecting empathy at all costs and got a question about empathic resonance and thought to expand on some of what I was saying about empathy. So before, as I sometimes say, we stand in someone else's shoes, we have to know what it's like to stand in our own. And without a kind of attentional practice, people have a very impoverished sense of what it's like to stand in their own shoes, to understand their own mind. And so mindfulness is, we could say, maybe kind of practice of self-directed empathy, a deep listening to what it's like to be me now. And 1,000 times, 10,000 times, we witness almost unbearable poignancy of suffering and witness the longing for peace. Every movement of the mind, some level, is an expression of that longing. And this highly vivid, nuanced, topographical map of our inner life is really the precondition for empathizing with the other. And it's interesting that even mindfulness-based interventions that feature zero explicit instructions about sila and ethics and that kind of thing, even those kinds of interventions seem to increase pro-social feeling and behavior. Like the gesture of awareness has a quality, nonviolence. So in the neuroscience literature, empathy is often defined as three components: an affective response to another person, emotional resonance, the cognitive capacity to take the perspective of the other, mentalizing or theory of mind, and then some regulatory mechanism that keeps track of the origins of self feelings and other feelings. To be in the shoes of another, I think Carl Rogers says, as if it were your own, but without losing the as-if condition. And so we're really cultivating these three skills, and they're not always correlated. And so the first capacity is sharing another's feelings. That's independent from the cognitive mentalizing capacity. And researcher, meditator Tanya Singer said, like, strong emotional empathizers are not necessarily proficient mentalizers. And a con man can know and predict a lot about the inner life of others, but feels zero emotional resonance. We are cultivating both capacities. In other words, we're cultivating love and understanding. Secretly, you have to fall in love with sentient beings, Kangchul Rinpoche says. We're feeling our inner life and we're studying our mind and the causal unfolding as best we can. And we're in the game as practitioners of becoming better predictors of happiness, of seeing how some predictions fail, trying to understand our inner life by making guesses about what happens next. And all of that learning, studying, all of that studying of our life helps us understand the inner life of others. We could say that empathy is a kind of dance between knowing and not knowing. And I might look into the eyes of a practitioner with some hypotheses about how they suffer, about what their freedom might look like, but it's merely a hypothesis. And we have to be careful to stay poised in a sense of not knowing, careful not to act on a kind of confirmation bias where we prematurely select a view and then look for more and more evidence to confirm that view. Stay open. We develop a reverence for what's shared and a reverence for difference. We open to what is shared deeply, suffering, longing for peace. And we open to difference. We're not projecting our stories into the open space of the other. We're not filling the unknown with the familiar platitudes of our life. We're not trying to make them too similar to us, reverence for difference. And this takes a great deal of humility, self-knowledge and humility, the dominion of the self story must perish. I was talking to a 22-year-old like yesterday with existential questions. And could sense her paramis, you know? And in some moments, even though she had come to me, I might as well have been her student. And on this path, we're all doctors and all patients, and we have to be deeply fluid in how we incarnate in this moment. Mentalizing, understanding. We're modeling their strength, their goodness, and modeling their pain as best we can perceive. We're asked to understand their egoic fragility, kind of pressure points in their being, sacred cows of their ego, and any intervention needs to accommodate the clinging that cannot yet be spoken. And egoic fragility is not merely about the kind of curation of self stories, but the egoic investment in views and opinions and conventions of all kinds. And this is why it feels so freeing to be with someone who's free. You sense that you cannot clank into their pain, rigidity. Now, empathy is about mirroring, but it's not a perfect mirroring. It's a process sometimes called ostension of a kind of pointing out or a markedness to the mirroring where we give a kind of slight emphasis to something we're perceiving so that our empathy becomes a kind of pedagogical moment. In other words, we're tracing out the trajectory of freedom for them. We're perceiving them and tracing something out, just a little accentuation of this or that. Empathy is calibrated in the sense that too much empathy, too much kind of intimacy can feel intrusive and sometimes I kind of do the energetic equivalent of turning my gaze away. Sometimes I almost want to invite people to turn away. Sometimes there's the kind of conditions, the permission for boundaries to melt, right? The whole tragedy of human existence, Krishnamurti said, lies between subject and object. Love is the face of emptiness. And this love is both deeply attuned and entirely impersonal, indifferent to all particularities. We cannot lose the as if condition, as if it were your own pain, but don't lose the as if condition. We have to track the origins of self and other feelings. And we must know the context where we're prone to lose the as-if condition, where maybe my own history gets me confused about, about where the pain of the other floods my mind in some way. We have to know the kind of context conditions, where that happens. The partner asked what I was going to talk about tonight. I said empathy, and I asked her, how am I doing? And her reply was, good, not great. Good, not great. And she said, no, you're doing good. Doing good. But sometimes I can sense that you're noticing how I'm caught in a kind of web of my own thought-based suffering. But it's better if I can come to that realization on my own. Okay, fair enough. We can lose the as-if condition when, our heart is tied to another being in a particular way. We can lose the as-if condition when the pain of the other resonates with our wounds rather than our love. And when that happens, when that kind of collapse happens, the impulses we will have tend to be counter-therapeutic. And compassion is not the intolerance of the other's pain or the refusal to open to the endlessness of samsara, ungovernability of dukkha. So empathy, it's the realm of love, of art, of literature, of healing. And may we cultivate and protect empathy. Okay. Thank you. Thank you all. See you next time.